Hi, it's Patrick here with a story about the word pregnant. So on the big show on the world, we've been running a series of stories and interviews about pregnancy around the world, about how medical practices and cultural attitudes, about how they vary from one place to the next. The series is called The Ninth Month. Now, on the subject of cultural attitudes, we found evidence online of people reading meaning into the words that various languages have for pregnant. And that got us thinking, can you do that? Do the words that people use to describe pregnancy from one linguistic group to the next, do they tell us something about what it is to be pregnant in those societies? Or does language not function that way? Here's my story. The most commonly used word for pregnant in Russian is
беременная.
Now that only means pregnant figuratively. The literal meaning of the word is quite different.
It has this kind of almost quasi-religious meaning of burden, of punishment. You're carrying your burden.
That's Svetlana Boym, by the way, a professor of Slavic and comparative literature at Harvard. And it's not just Russian. Words for pregnant in several other Slavic languages have the same root meaning of burden. Makes you think, how exactly do people in the Slavic world view pregnancy? And how exactly do speakers of the Chichewa language in the African nation of Malawi view it?
Pakati and matenda.
These two words for pregnancy both convey sickness, says Malawian journalist Ivoni Sundu. In fact, the literal meaning of the first word, pakati, is between life and death. Sundu told me about a third word for pregnant in Chichewa, wodwala. Its root meaning?
It's not all that different. Wodwala, it means somebody who is sick.
Three words, the only three words in Chichewa to describe pregnancy, and they all link the condition to sickness. Here's one way of describing pregnant in Chinese.
Youxi.
Wen Jing Li is a Chinese teacher here in Boston. She says Youxi is made up of two Chinese characters.
Youxi means have happiness.
Yo means have, Xi means happiness. Put them together and they mean pregnant. Now these three languages aren't outliers. Translate pregnant into many other languages and you'll get words that break down into all kinds of meanings. The Spanish word for pregnant, embarazada, is often confused with the English word embarrassed. They may have different meanings today, but the two words come from the same root. The word for pregnant in the Amazonian tribal language of Piraha is kuhiaga, which means stomach. Now to us, that may sound vague, but when the Piraha say her stomach is big, it means only one thing. All these words and all these meanings, they're rich with cultural information. It makes sense that the Chinese, with their Confucian values, would view pregnancy as a happy circumstance, just as it's not surprising that Russians, with all the suffering in their society, would view pregnancy as a burden. And in a poor country like Malawi, where women may not be able to get adequate prenatal care, you can see how pregnancy might be viewed as sickness. It stands to reason that we should mine these words for clues about the behavior and views of the people who use them, right?
It's really tempting to think that the different words that we often use has something to do with the culture that a language corresponds to. But actually, there's a lot less to ideas like that than we like to think.
This is linguist John McWhorter of Columbia University, here to reluctantly burst a popular bubble.
It's a shame. I know how attractive it seems because I've been there.
Okay, so what is going on when the literal meaning of a word takes off in so many different semantic directions from one language to the next? And why shouldn't we think that it tells us something about other cultures? Back to the word in question, the English word.
Pregnant. You know, what actually does that word mean?
Well, look in the dictionary and you'll see that the English word comes from a Latin word that means something like before birth. Over time, pregnant has picked up other meanings. It can refer, for example, to something that's filled with significance or emotion, a pregnant pause. Now, it's not clear where these other meanings came from. One theory is that a French word that sounded a bit like pregnant became confused with the English word, and so over time, pregnant expanded its meaning. It's a pretty common way for a word to evolve, not planned, just randomly. When we say pregnant, says McWhorter, we can't possibly think of all of its nuances, let alone its original root meaning.
To speak is to use words and expressions in idiomatic ways that float away from their literal meanings. To an extent, that we don't often have occasion to think about, but it means that reading meaning into the words and expressions that we mouth is often a very dangerous proposition.
Dangerous because we might draw completely false conclusions about a group of people. Are the Chinese, for example, really happier about pregnancy than others? Not in recent decades. China's one-child policy must have resulted in millions of unhappy pregnancies. So what is the connection between how you speak and how you think? You say pregnant, you think happy or burdensome or sick, or maybe you don't think those things at all.
Really, it's just that language and thought don't correspond the way we might think they do when we look at language laid out all neatly on the page.
Over the years, linguists have gone back and forth on how much the language you speak affects how you think. Today, most linguists don't think it does much. But recently, a few studies on how we perceive the likes of cardinal directions and color have concluded that speech does sometimes shape thought. John McWhorter, though, is skeptical. So skeptical that he's written a book called The Language Hoax, Why the World Looks the Same in Any Language. So what, if anything, runs through the minds of Chinese, Chichewa, and Russian speakers when they use their words for pregnant? Here's Wenjing Li again on the two Chinese characters, yo, meaning have, and xi, meaning happiness.
When we say yoshi together, we always think about got pregnant. We don't think about what yo means and what xi means separately.
But does that mean that we should simply ignore the root or literal meanings of words always? Words had to evolve out of some sort of meaning. What about those Chichewa words for pregnant, all meaning sick? Chichewa speaker Ivoni Sundu guesses that the word pakati, meaning literally between life and death, once made a lot of sense.
Most of the women who were pregnant ended up perhaps dying. So that's the reason why our forefathers coined this word pakati.
Of course, given the random way that words often evolve, they're not exactly the most reliable pieces of historical evidence. But sometimes there may be a glimmer. Sometimes they may just offer a clue about cultural attitudes in the past. Harvard's Svetlana Boym thinks so. There's the Russian word for pregnancy, bereminaya, with its literal meaning of burden. She says Russians, until quite recently, did think of pregnancy as a burden.
Women in old Soviet times were not given painkillers. There was an idea that you're supposed to sort of suffer your burden as a woman, which I think is quite a horrifying idea.
Now, medical practices evolve. So do cultural attitudes. In Russia today, the government is upgrading maternity hospitals and paying couples a cash bonus if they have more than one child. So, is pregnancy still a burden? The word and its root meaning are growing ever farther apart. For The World, I'm Patrick Cox. So, back now to John McWhorter. Here he is talking with me about some of the broader implications of interpreting what people are saying when they say pregnant.
When we look at something like words for pregnancy, and it seems that in Slavic it sounds like one is saying that one is burdened, and in Chinese it sounds like one is saying that one is full of happiness and the rest. If we accept those ideas, then we have to accept other ideas about the expressions that people use or don't use when they talk that I think would be much less savory. And so to give you a random example, Swedish doesn't have a word for wipe. You know, they have a word for erase. You can dry something off. That's the word they'll often give you. But there isn't any particular word that means wipe. And yet, how many of us are going to tell any Swedes that we know that they don't wipe? Rather, it's that they can talk about wiping. They just use a word that means something more general. We've all got the same brain. Culturally, I think we're all the same about wiping. It's just that languages differ in the way they happen to cut things up and the extents to which words happen to correspond to which literal meanings. And so what it means is that we very often don't say what we mean, not in the sense of lying, but in that words and expressions correspond only approximately to what we're actually thinking of and referring to when we use them.
Okay, fair enough. But can we take anything at all culturally from the fact that etymologically, some of these words are, they're just all over the map, and they mean almost, you know, the opposite to one another?
You know, Patrick, it's one of those things where it's just too much fun to work out. And so, for example, There is evidence that if you're a French person, you are more likely to imagine a table speaking with a high voice if it were a cartoon character than we English speakers are, because table is marked as feminine in that language. And there are studies that show that depending on what gender your language happens to mark a noun with in that random way that many European languages do, that if you're asked to describe that object, you're more likely to give it the traits that correspond to that gender. And so if a key is masculine, you're more likely to describe it as something that's jabbing and hard, as opposed to if a key is feminine in your language, you're more likely to describe it as tinkling and golden and the like. However, that being said, ask a European whether they actually do think of those objects as sexed. They don't. If you apply certain psychological experiments to them, then you can tease out that there are certain tiny flickers of bias based on how the language works. But to take those experiments and to extend it into the idea that we're seeing people experiencing life in a different way, different worldviews, I don't think corresponds to what the reality is, especially because once we go down that path, we end up being dragged into other notions about how people perceive the world that we wouldn't desire.
Sure. But what about all of those bilinguals who say, okay, let's pretend that I am myself bilingual in Chinese and Chichewa, right? Mm-hmm. So here I am telling a story about pregnancy in one language and then in the other. Mm-hmm. Am I going to have a different feeling about pregnancy in each of those languages, given how the words have come into being? Because certainly, as you know, there are a large number of bilinguals who really truly believe that they have different personalities and from one language mm-hmm. to another, and they certainly think differently in one language mm-hmm. to another.
And, of course, there's always the question of where language leaves off and culture begins. Certainly, people may feel like they're belonging to different cultures, but that's different from how your grammar works and how your mental dictionary happens to split concepts up. Quite often, in my experience, when I hear people say that they're different people in different languages, not that this is every time, but I think there's a leaning, it tends to be people who learn the second language later, in which case you can't help thinking that it's predictable that you're going to feel somewhat different in a language that you learned with a different set of tools and when your personality was already formed, as opposed to when you learned it in the cradle. But as for pregnancy in Chichewa versus pregnancy in Chinese, in a way, that suggests some of the problem with the idea that we're actually expressing different cultural ideas with these different conventionalized expressions, because since the Chichewa way and the Chinese way are so different, it's hard to imagine one person who could somehow split the difference between those two things. It's much easier to imagine that person imagines pregnancy pretty much just the way that you or I do, and it's just that their languages happen to mark that concept in an arbitrarily different way than our languages do. After all, think about this. In Chinese, to say, if you saw my sister, you'd know she was pregnant. That's a sentence that you might say in Chinese. To say that in Chinese is also the way that you would say, if you see my sister, you know she's pregnant. It's also the way to say, if you had seen my sister, you would know that she... Now, let me change that. It's also the way to say, if you had seen my sister, you would have known she was pregnant. You can say all three of those things with the same Chinese sentence. They're much less explicit about indicating notions of hypotheticality than European languages tend to be. They leave more of it to context. Now, there was an experiment done by a very responsible person that suggested that on the basis of that, to speak Chinese is to be less sensitive to the hypothetical than an English speaker. Now, notice we don't want to hear that because it sounds like it's questioning the intelligence of a billion people, and we don't want to question the intelligence of anybody. And so, if we don't want that sort of experiment, and we would fight the person who claimed something like that down to the ground, which is what happened to the guy who did that work, then we also have to worry about supposing that if somebody associates pregnancy with being happy, that that means that they're actually thinking of pregnancy in a way that we might find rather picturesque from our rather vanilla sense of pregnant.
Right. I mean, you said it yourself that in Chinese, the Chinese language depends on context as much. So there are the cues embedded in the language, presumably, that would be able to express those nuances that you described.
Well, there are ways of saying things like that in Chinese if you work at it, if you want to be especially explicit. But generally, in the run of casual conversation, which is what speech is, to say, if you had seen my sister, you would have known she was pregnant. What you say is, if you see my sister, you know she pregnant. That's a slight oversimplification, but only slight. And that's because that's the way that language happens to be. You can say it, therefore, without any of these cues built in. Some languages just happen to be more telegraphic than others. Now, the simple fact is that we could read that as indication that the people who speak those languages are somehow less sensitive or less well-versed in the hypothetical than we are. We don't want to do that. We sense that that probably isn't true. It's just that language doesn't correspond to thought the way one might think. But if we don't want to accuse the Chinese of being insensitive to hypotheticality, then we also have to be careful about saying that their expression for pregnancy indicates a happier perspective on it than the perspective of, say, a French person who's in a belt or a Spanish person who could be analyzed as having a burden or the Russian version of the word, too. There's a randomness to these things that isn't fun to the scientific mind, but unfortunately is the nature of what human language is.
John McWhorter, professor of linguistics at Columbia and author of the forthcoming book, The Language Hoax, Why the World Looks the Same in Any Language. I get the feeling there'll be more from that interview in a future podcast, as well as one or two contrasting views. There's more on pregnancy and language, including a nice animation, at pri.org/language. The pod is also on Facebook. There's a World in Words page. And I'm on Twitter. My handle is Patry Cox, PatriCox. I'll be back soon. How's that for vague? Should be next week with a couple of stories, one on the English names that young Chinese people are taking, and also a Chinese name for me. Actually, three names. See you then.